You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, it is Thursday, April the 8th, and I'm talking to you just as the declarations have dropped, the final 40 declarations have dropped for the Randox Grand National. Only the Storyteller came out, which has allowed Black Lion to slip in at the bottom, and Secret Reprieve, who was a big, big fancy, is the second reserve. He needs two more to come out before mid-morning tomorrow to get a run, so that looks unlikely at this stage. Some Neck for Ireland is first reserve. Corto Rico third reserve and Fagan fourth reserve, but that would really take something quite extraordinary. But Secret Reprieve amongst the market leaders is the one who misses the cut, which is a shame for him and for Evan Williams and for the Ruckers. But Black Lion is in. Big jockey news, as anticipated on this podcast yesterday, is that Patrick Mullins will take the ride, replacing the injured Paul Townend on the heavily fancied Burrow Saint. Rishi Prasad is with me this morning. Rishi, we are separated by the imaginary COVID barrier, so I'm in the green zone here at Aintree and you're in the amber zone working for ITV this afternoon. But we are united by the delights not only of this podcast, but also by the delights of the impending Randox Grand National. Hard lines for Secret Reprieve and co.
Indeed. Disappointing news for backers and connections of Secret Reprieve. There is still a possibility, but it looks unlikely at this stage, which is a shame because he was one of those horses that potentially still had a little bit up his sleeve going into this year's Grand National. It does mean that Black Lion is in, though.
Yes.
Old Black Lion, who you reminded me started favourite for this race some years ago. Well, how old is he now? 12? Been a hero for the Twist and Dovers team over the years, obviously now with Dan Skelton and the colours of Darren and Annalie Yates. Not sure he still has all that old ability, but nice to see an old favourite.
I know that our friend and podcast colleague Lydia Hislop, who is going to be on the show tomorrow, the special 200th edition, so are you, but you don't know it yet. She gave me half an idea that Black Lion might run quite a good race when I spoke to her yesterday.
Well, I hope he does. When did we last see him? At Newcastle? I find it hard to believe that Black Lion's going to trouble the judge, but who am I to say something like that? I'm sure people will remember those two words, Omaha City, me ruling a horse out of a race, coming back to bite me on the bum at 50-1. So
that made your career, Rish.
Ouch, Lucky, that's cruel, but probably accurate, so thank you.
Okay, let's...
He's no Fujiyama Crest, let's just say that.
Let's talk about one or two other key points out of the declarations, which was as predicted on this podcast yesterday. Patrick Mullins will get the ride on Burrow Saint. Now, the Ritchie family have always had quite a lot of luck with Patrick Mullins when other jockeys haven't been available. So that's a big, big ride for him.
Oh, huge. It's huge. And what a story would be, of course, if he could ride Burrow Saint to victory for his father in the colours of Rich Ritchie. A horse who has clearly got a massive chance. I quite like Burrow Saint. He didn't make my shortlist, but he's single figure odds at the moment, and he obviously has a lot of credentials at the right position in the handicap, you think, to perhaps cause a big ripple in this year's race. But he didn't make the Passage shortlist this year, Lucky.
Okay, we're going to save the Passad shortlist until the very end of the show, and then it'll get reprised again on tomorrow's special edition. But we're going to talk to some connections of leading fancies, and there are very few riders in this race who have won the race before. Indeed, I think I can only count two, and they are... Can you name them, Rish?
Daryl Jacob.
Daryl Jacob is one.
You've got me. I can't think of the other.
Well, the other is the man who rode Silver Birch to success in 2007.
Oh my goodness. Robbie Power.
He is Robbie Power, and he rides Magic of Light this time. She's been second in the race before. She was second 2 years ago, and she bids to become the first mare since Nickel Coin 70 years ago to win the race. And I have been catching up with Robbie, who was busy on his treadmill at home in Ireland before coming over to Aintree today, but he has fond memories of Silver Birch's year.
Yeah, we went in, like, obviously Silver Birch was a 33-1 shot, trained by little known at the time, Gordon Elliott, and when he had a, in camp, we were quietly confident he could run a big race. He'd won over the fences before, and he'd been working very well at home on the build-up to the Nationals, so we were confident with a bit of luck and running, and if things went our way, we could finish in the first five. And, just one thing led to another. We got a dream run around the whole way. He'd fallen at the chair in the National the year before, and he remembered that because he never touched the tweak the whole way around, and a couple of horses fell in front of us at certain times in the races. But when you win them big handicaps, things go your way, and every horse that fell in front of me just seemed to roll down my way.
Was it your first ride in the race?
No, second. I'd ridden Spot the Difference for Enda Bulger in 2005.
And just that whole build up to the race must have been lovely for you, because relatively little pressure, and then suddenly you win the race, life changes.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd had a terrible season that season with injury and everything like that. You know, things hadn't been going great. And it's amazing, just one big win like that, and everything has turned on its head. Came home to Punston a fortnight later and won the champion hurdle there in a horse called Silent Oscar for Harry Rogers.
And since then, you've won just about every big race in the book, you know, for Jesse Harrington and many others, and Colin Tizard latterly. But just try and describe what it is about the Grand National that still draws everyone to the extent that it does.
It's unique. It's the different fences, 40 runners, which is the only race all year we have that number. And the city of Liverpool really capture the imagination of the Grand National. You know, they really get behind it, and it's an unbelievable spectacle, and one that is going to be very strange this year without the crowds there. You know, it's going to make a huge difference.
It will make a big difference. Will it make any difference to you? I mean, you're riding a mare that's been second in the race before, Magic of Light. She was second to Tiger Roll 2 years ago. How much confidence can you carry into the race this time?
It's the Grand National. You can never be too confident because you don't know what's going to happen. But she seems in great form. She ran a nice race over a trip that was way inadequate for her at Cheltenham. She came home very strongly and finished the race out well. So, she goes there in good form. She'll enjoy the nice ground. And she jumped around. She made a couple of mistakes the year she was second. So if we can iron them mistakes out and get a good round of jumping, hopefully she can run a big race again.
And I can hear that treadmill going in the background. How far have you run this morning, or walked?
I've been on for 35 minutes now.
Oh my God.
I'm actually walking at 70 degrees heat. So when you get to my age, Nick, you need a bit of heat in the back.
You're walking at 70 degrees heat and you've done 35 minutes. Are you on one of those ones with the incline as well?
Yeah, I just haven't turned on the incline yet.
My word. Well, you're making me feel quite tired just listening, but sounds like you're not out of breath and you haven't turned a hair, so you're fully fit and raring to go.
It's April time. If you're out of breath at this time of the season, you've been doing something wrong.
Robbie, best of luck Saturday. We're looking forward to seeing you.
See you. Thanks, Nick.
Take care. What I love about this podcast, and I'm very indulged by everybody in racing who just lets me ring them at the most inconvenient time of the day. Because
do you know? I thought it was an agent actually, but we've got runners elsewhere on Saturday at Newcastle and possibly Chepstow. And that I thought, oh, another agent. And I had saw one horse wasn't jocked up at Newcastle, and I was calling back thinking, who have you got available?
Well, I'm sorry I'm not an agent. I don't know whether I'm better or worse than an agent. Anyway, this is Richard Hobson. He trains Lord Dumenil. And you can hear just there's a little bit of background noise. You're sort of in the thick of it this morning, Richard.
I am, yes. We've got a painter and decorator in the house. And I've also got twin babies, which are nearly a year old. And a 4.5-year-old girl who's off school at the moment. So, yeah, pretty hectic.
Could I hear is she a keen like guitar player or ukulele player? I'm sure I heard some kind of string being played.
She is, yeah. But she's not very good at it at the moment.
Listen, there's time. After all, Lord Dumenil, he himself is something of a late bloomer. How are you feeling going into Saturday?
Well, he's absolutely fabulous, actually. I mean, we've never had him any better. He looks amazing in his skin, his fit. He's probably peaking in his sort of, you know, where we want to be, as good as he's ever going to be, his age. And we're hoping for a massive run. Obviously, we want the rain that's not going to come. But as you told me earlier, that the water's going on the track and hopefully it'll be on the soft side of good.
Yeah, I think it's going to be on the easy side, and we did have a little bit of rain last night, maybe a tiny bit, I mean, negligible difference to the ground, but I think for horses who are genuine soft ground horses, okay, it's not going to be in their favour, but I don't think it's going to be like a good ground national of 10, 15, 20 years ago, put it that way.
No, I mean, obviously, they'd make it as safe as possible now, and the trip alone is obviously going to help him, the 4 mile, 2.5 furlongs, and he's such a good jumper, touch wood, that the combination of the trip and the jumping and the softer side of good would be fabulous. There is another agent calling me now. I wish they'd leave me alone.
Now, you have been, if you bear with me, an agent in your own right in a slightly different way, insofar as you built up your reputation buying horses from France, including the great champion hurdler Hurricane Fly, before you took out your trainer's license. You've now managed to get this horse. He'd actually had quite a bit of experience in France before you bought him, hadn't he?
Yeah, he'd never won, obviously. He was still a maiden. I went over to see him in France, and it run some nice races around Auteuil, being placed more so over another agent trying to get hold of me, more so over a shorter trip. And I remember years ago, one of the first ever horses I bought was a horse called Iris the Bomb, and he won the Scottish Grand National for Sean Curran. I don't know if you remember the horse.
I do, 66-1.
I jumped in with Charlie Huxley on, and you know, sometimes you can see a horse at Auteuil when they're sort of running on at the end of the race over 2 mile 5, 2 mile 6, you just think potentially in time over English fence, you know, over those long distances, they might shine. But what he did have, he was very sort of down in the doldrums, the fact that he's never won in his career and he didn't know how to win. And that was the hardest thing for us to turn around with him, really. But as soon as he got his head in front, it was like training a different horse altogether.
Yeah, because you had what, 12 or 15 goes before you won a race with him?
Yeah, he had 13 goes in France. Then we had about 12 goes, I think, or 11 or 12 goes. And then, obviously, when he broke his maiden at Newcastle, over 3 mile, 1.5 furlongs, that was it then. He was just a change. It was almost like the day after he'd won, he was a changed horse completely.
That's fantastic. And another lovely aspect of this story is that Nick Schofield is going to ride him. And Nick's had a rough time of it. He came back with that brilliant winner at the Cheltenham Festival. Just talk to me about the jockey arrangements on this horse, because Paul O'Brien normally rides him, doesn't he?
Yeah, so obviously, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth for Paul. But when Paul Porter bought the horse with his pals, there was this condition there. He's very friendly with Nick Schofield and has been for many years, and he said, well, can Nick ride my horse? And I said, well, hopefully at some point, but Nick doesn't ride for me, I said. I want to use my own jockeys in the yard at the time, and he said okay. So anyway, Paul obviously rode him, and he kept saying, can Nick ride him. And then there was a decision made really for the Grand National that they wanted somebody with experience, basically. That's the bottom line. Somebody who'd been round the course, which Nick has. Probably he's been riding over the fences since the age of 16. And that was agreed kind of before the National, and set in stone. But there's no reason why Paul won't be getting back on Lord of Menil around his favourite Haydock and places like that.
Well, I wish you all the very best of luck. I know it's a big ask, but you've got a horse who stays, who's ahead of the handicapper. And if there were to be some sort of a deluge, I guess you'd be quite confident.
I would, definitely. Yeah, he is in great order. Obviously, we need as much luck on the day, as you know. But very much looking forward to running him, Nick.
Richard Hobson there, the trainer of Lord de Menil, and before that, Robbie Power. Lord de Menil, that was an interesting jockey angle, I thought, there, Rishi. The owner wanted Nick Schofield, has obviously been after him for a long, long time, and finally everybody's relented and the partnership comes to bear.
It's hard on Paul O'Brien, no doubt. But this isn't the first time it's happened in a big race, and obviously it won't be the last time it's happened in a big race, where owner's priority means that they can choose who they want, and they want Nick Schofield. Nick Schofield's had, I think, 8 rides in total in the Grand National. He was 3rd on T for Tree back in the day, and he is, of course, a very, very good rider. I think Lord de Minaur is an interesting contender because he is a hardened individual, and in the Grand National, I quite like horses that have that gritty factor of they've been there, they've done it, they've slugged it out in the toughest of conditions, and of course he's proven that, you know, winning the National Trial at Haydock. So he is definitely a player, and what a ride it is for Nick Schofield to pick up.
And this is a horse who, was, as Richard was saying, took 25 goes to break his maiden. I mean, that talk about triumph of persistence.
And that's exactly it. When I say about a hardened horse, you know, a horse who's sort of been around the block, he's earned his right over a period of time by going through all those difficult experiences and becoming better. And you can see the fact that he sort of blossomed this year. And hopefully he's in for a big run. I think it's Richard's only 2nd Grand National runner.
And I think it is 70 years since Nicol Coyne won the Grand National. She was the last mare. Magic of Light got the closest, finishing 2nd 2 years ago. Through our youths and childhoods, there have been mares run well in the race, Dubacilla and Ebony Jane and others.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember some of those, Dubacilla in particular. She was a fantastic mare. I think Magic of Light, I have a feeling that her chance went when she was 2nd to Tiger Roll. I suspect that she's now in a position in the handicap where it's going to make life difficult for her, but course and distance form is always a plus. You know that she can do it. And clearly with those connections, to be respected, all the cliches that you can think of. Yeah. But I just feel that perhaps her chance might have gone as a potential winner now.
And she is not the only mare in the lineup. The others are Shattered Love, former Cheltenham Festival winner, who ran quite well in the new mare's chase at the festival the other day. I didn't think she was completely impossible. And Cabaret Queen for Syndicates Racing, so big Syndicate ownership, and quite a few of those in the field. So 3 fillies. There are 3 female jockeys in the field. Rachel Blackmore, the best chance, it would seem, on Minella Times, though Bryony Frost rides Yala Enki and Tabitha Worsley on Sub Lieutenant. Do you like the chances of any of their mounts?
If I'm entirely honest, no. I respect Minella Times primarily, obviously, connections and the fact that you feel that Minella Times probably does have a little bit of leeway with the handicap. You think that there's a little bit to come still with Minella Times. So I give Minella Times a bit of respect. But I mean, Paul Nicholls has been pretty confident about a big run from Yala Enki. Again, I'm not entirely certain that the conditions, obviously, is going to be much better ground than Yala Enki's encountered this season, and it would be a surprise to me anyway if Yala Enki were to make a big splash on the Grand National this year.
Victory for any or all would be a great story and an important chapter in the race's history. And we're 4 decades on from one of the race's most important chapters, when Bob Champion, who defied the odds to overcome cancer, and Alden Eaty, an unsound horse who'd been nursed back to full health by his trainer Josh Gifford, teamed up to win the race. It was quite simply one of the most remarkable moments this sport or any other sport had ever seen. The late Josh Gifford's son Nick now trains horses from the same stable in Findon in West Sussex. I've been catching up with him, and I began by suggesting that Alden Eaty's victory must really have informed his entire upbringing.
Oh, very much so, Nick. I mean, I was too young. I was 9. I was up there, but the enormity of it all hadn't really registered with me. I was just too young to understand how ill Bob had been, and also, you know, the injuries that the horse had had. But from then on, it's been very apparent. I mean, every year the Grand National comes around and his name is mentioned in dispatches. Look, it's set my dad up. I mean, he was already established, but that win really cranked it up a notch, you know, and it's wonderful that, you know, to be associated with this story.
And of course, he himself had Grand National history. Just for those who don't remember, he the champion jockey 4 times and was one of the unluckier losers as a rider.
Yes, the great Honey End. Yes. So that was the year when not many finished, and there was all the carnage at the the Foinaven fence, were named after Foinaven. But yes, no, he was on the favourite that year, and even having to, you know, remount and do the jump the fence again, he nearly got there. But yeah, look, it's such a wonderful race with rich history. It really is.
And once you've been involved in a win in the Grand National, and that magic week comes around year upon year in the Gifford household, is there quite a special feeling whether or not you've got any personal involvement in the race?
Oh, very much so, Nick. It is so unique. It's such a one-off race, and it's one of the races, if not the race, that everybody wants to win or certainly be involved in. I mean, just to have a runner in it is exciting because there's always that unknown. You know, it's not a Grade One race. It is a handicap, and therefore, if you've got there, you've got every chance. And so, you know, even if we haven't got a runner, we're always crowded around the telly at home, and all the staff love it, and everyone does, the whole village, you know, like everybody does up and down the country, they'll all go and have their pound on a name they fancy or whatever. But it is, it's a race that, not quite a stopper nation, but everybody loves to get involved in watching the race.
And you see those images year in, year out of Findon in 1981 when the horse came back. I mean, talk about a whole community coming out to support one horse. It sort of sends a shiver down your spine just thinking about it.
Yeah, look, we've still got, you know, all the pictures of, I mean, the whole yard, there wasn't, it was standing room only, you know, the all the way through the village, past the shops, there were banners out, there was bunting out, parties going on for a couple of days, you know, and everybody turned up in the yard and trampled all my man's prize daffodils on the lawn, and it was quite extraordinary.
So would it be fair to say that if there's one thing you really want to achieve in your training career, it's to emulate your dad and win the Grand National?
Yeah, look, I'd love to. I mean, that's realistically probably the size of our yard. You know, we might, if you got one in it, you've got a chance. I mean, we're probably not going to win a Gold Cup. We're not going to win any of the fancied races because those horses are so difficult to find that you need an awful lot of luck. But with a staying chaser, if you're in the race, you've got every chance. So realistically, that would be one race. Yes, we'd love to win it. Of course, we would. We'd love to be involved in it. And hopefully next year we'll have a couple. But there's a long way to go till then.
There was a horse called Glen Rocco who you were lining up for the race. He has been injured for a little while. How's that project going?
Yeah, we've stalled this season, but it's not career threatening. We found a small niggle with one of his legs, so we've had to stop with him. That's all healed up now, but obviously we've run out of time. We'll give him a break in the summer, Nick, and it'll be all systems go, hopefully, to have a crack at it next year. You know, he'll have to win a race to get up in the weights, but that's what he's going to be trained for. And so it would be lovely. Big chestnut, you know, big white face. It would be lovely, the similarities there. So, yeah, that's the plan for next season.
Nick Gifford there with wonderful memories of Alden 80, 40 years on, Rishi, 40 years since 1981. Quite a sporting year.
Incredible. 81 has to go down as one of the most amazing years of sport. Obviously, the incredible Alden 80 and Bob Champion, Shergar winning the Derby in 81, and for cricket fans like you and I, Botham's Ashes was also incredible. 81 was also the year, Lucky, that John McEnroe used that famous quote, "You cannot be serious," at Wimbledon when he won his first Wimbledon title. So 81 for a year of sport was quite outstanding, and Alden 80's success, I think, just about tops them all.
And they won the team competition, didn't they, at the BBC Sports Personality of the Year, and there were a good few rivals for them that year.
Well, I mentioned one of them.
Yeah.
For them to come out on top of the England cricket team that year was a pretty impressive shout, but rightly so. I mean, what they overcame, Bob Champion and Alden 80 together, it is fairy tale. It's almost, it was a miracle.
Let's talk about this afternoon a little. You may know all the results by the time you listen to this podcast today, but just for those of you who are right in early, Paul Nicholls, who missed out at Cheltenham, if he misses out this afternoon at Aintree, he's not going to be a happy man because he's got all his big guns firing.
Oh, he's going to be heartbroken were he to walk away without a winner today. He has some outstanding chances today, no doubt, in the opening race. Of course, he's got Hitman, who got back to winning ways after coming down at Sandown when he was travelling very, very easily. He's got Mon Morale in the second, in the Betway Bowl. He's obviously got Clan de Zobo. He's also got Real Steel, who I think will run a big race with Brian Frost later on. And McFabulous, who I actually quite fancy today. I know, listening to Ruby and Lydia chatting away, they feel that, or certainly Ruby feels that Brewing Up a Storm might beat McFabulous again, but I think McFabulous, on obviously now level weights and on this ground, I think that's a key thing for McFabulous. I think his best performances have come on quicker ground, and this will probably be the quickest ground he's raced on all season, and I think that's key to him, and I expect him to go very close to winning.
Okay, so finally, drum roll please, the big reveal. Rishi Prasad's big four in the Randox Grand National this year are...
I actually feel a bit nervous saying this, Lucky, because I feel almost embarrassed already by my selections. But I like Farclas to win the Grand National with 10-3 for Denise Foster. He will become the first seven-year-old since 1940 to win the Grand National, were he to be successful on Saturday. So I think he can do it. He won the Triumph Hurdle in the colours of Jigginstown Stud a few seasons back. A certain Tiger Roll managed to do the double. So I think Farclas, for me, to win it. Cloth Cap, can't rule him out. He's an outstanding candidate for the race, and I'm sure he's going to finish in the four. So Cloth Cap to finish second. I've gone for Mr. Malarkey, who had a wind up. He ran pretty well at Kempton on his first run after the wind up. He's always seemed like a national type horse to me, so I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets on second run after the wind up. It would be a fairy tale success were he to provide the Colin Tizard team with victory, but I think he might just come up a little bit short, but I think he'll run really well. And the top weight, Bristol DeMay, I feel will fill the fourth spot. He's got that touch of class, obviously. I don't need to tell anybody about that. So Farclas, Cloth Cap, Mr. Malarkey, Bristol DeMay, 1, 2, 3, 4, the 2021 Randox Health Grand National. Boom.
The field is complete. We are complete today. Join us again tomorrow for edition 200, the Grand National Nick Lowe Daily Podcast special. But from Rishi and from me for the moment, goodbye. We will see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. We'll